This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
The world is constantly nudging us, pulling, pushing, cajoling us toward our heart's longing and our true expression of joy. Yet, our conditioned mindsets can resist these gentle but insistent signals, too often dismissing synchronicity and serendipity, the very language of this magic, as little more than accident or annoyance. Playful but potent, be the magic nudges us too, showing us how to open ourselves to this ever-present guidance, to live a more peaceful, passion-filled, and enthusiastic life. With deep wisdom and a lighthearted tongue, Diane Pienta serves up personal stories and lessons learned in a collection of uplifting and actionable daily practices designed to train us, our minds, our bodies, and our hearts, to become joyfully tuned in to the guidance presented to us at every turn. Pienta's clear, strong vision provokes us to fully recognize that we inhabit this beautiful planet for a mere blink of an eye. And Be the Magic shows us that when this grand realization is nourished by small daily acts, our magic inevitably blooms in our lives, in the lives of others, and in the world herself. Valeria interviews Diane Pienta, the author of Be the Magic, bite-sized nuggets of wisdom to feed your joy, nourish your soul, and open your heart. Diane is also a forest therapy guide, healer, and creativity mentor who loves to help others reclaim and share their unique gifts through spiritual tools of all types. Her life is devoted to nature, creativity, connection, and community. A passion for helping others has been a thread throughout her previous 25-year business career in the hospitality, consulting, and real estate fields. A cancer diagnosis, chronic infections, and subsequent adrenal burnout redirected her to a spiritual and alternative path of healing. She credits the power of nature, creativity, energy medicine, sound, and spirituality with her health and loves to share so that others can live a vibrant, joyful life. Diane spent the last 20 years experiencing, studying, and sharing numerous healing modalities, and she intuitively weaves nature, art, writing, sound, and movement in her work. She understands how knowing one's gifts and sharing them with the world is a pathway to peace and healing. Offering forest therapy walks, Qigong classes, writing and creativity workshops, sound healing sessions, and individual coaching sessions, Diane creates space for others to play and discover their own innate wisdom. She has deep compassion for people who are in transition periods and loves assisting others to unlearn limiting beliefs and patterns. As a writer, Diane uses words to heal and create peace. She loves and honors the land deeply and is devoted to help others reclaim their connection to this magical world. In her spare time, she can often be found hugging a tree at sunrise, dancing with the moon, fiddling, felting, or gathering wonder makers to frolic and picnic at sunset. In addition to her healing certifications, she holds a BS from Cornell University, a certification in positive psychology from Whole Being Institute, and has studied at the Radcliffe Institute. Meet Diane at dianepienta.com. Here's the interview with Diane Pienta.
In your own words, who is Diane Pienta?
Thanks, Valeria. So who I say I am in the world is someone who knows in my bones and in my heart that the world is constantly sending us signals and synchronicities and magic when we're just open to it. You know, I love Walt Whitman's quote that the sidewalks are literally littered with postcards from God. And I see how, myself included, we all have these blocks and these blinders. And when we're able to remove them, the world really does deliver magic and synchronicities. And there's this joy about it that I believe that we're here to experience. And so my access to that, both for myself and in working with other people, is through, I mean, there's thousands of ways that we can take off those blinders. And even as Rumi says, there's hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. But what I've found is that like a really strong connection is through nature and through community and through creativity. And what I think about nature, we are nature. We're not separate from nature, but we've somehow separated ourselves. And so I sense this deep sense of kind of disconnection and lack of belonging in the world. And so when we're able to connect back into nature in that rhythm and get into the rhythm and get into our own rhythm and access our own intuition, you know, then it becomes this beautiful dance that we're dancing with life instead of like getting through another day. So, yeah, I would say that's who I am in the world.
Yes, and it's beautiful. Yes, I have to say, you know, usually say a billion times, a trillion times to these things because, yes, my view per se, my perception of reality, it's usually from the lens of spirituality. That's always, let's say, that's my foundation, though. And you know, it relates very much to the idea, the concept of magic. Or miracles, as you call it, too. And I'm wondering if they are one and the same, pure consciousness, God. You said that beautifully about us being nature itself. We're not separate from nature. And I often wonder what causes the separation, that disconnection. Would you say the thinking mind, the rational mind? The identification with that?
Yeah, I you know, what I see is that when our ego gets in the way, and also, you know, what I see is that we've been slowly over the last, you know, the culturally, we have more conveniences than ever before.
Yeah.
But it's not like we're out in nature more, you know, and it's also not that we're creating more. When I think about, you know, my grandmother from years ago, and she didn't have any of the conveniences that I had, but she had enough time to quilt and to cook and to sew clothes. And, you know, ancestors had time to make music and to dance and to sing. And those are the things that I see as being grounding us to this earth that we're on. You know, I love spirituality too, and I could spend so much time in the spiritual realm, but we're here to ground it on the earth and access our own magic and serve that forward. So, you know, when I see us, and self included, it's so easy to uproot now in this, in our culture. It's very busy. We don't really have the time to listen to our intuition, to listen to our own divine spark. And so we're so busy and we're so bombarded with, whether it's texts or emails or just constantly filling our ears. And so people, I think, you know, we're just a little bit more connected to the land, and we've just been more and more disconnected from the land. I know myself, even when I spend a couple of days in nature, like really in nature and tuned in and really listening with all of my senses and not on devices, I have a clarity and a sense of belonging and a sense of intuition that's very strong. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but I think there's part of that. And of course, you know, I think it's part of our but we came here, you know, we came in from the light and spend our lives often trying to get back to the light in all of these different ways and helping each other get back to the light. So just some thoughts there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's an interesting thing to see that some of us have this idea of spirituality as something separate also from the body mind, which for me, everything's connected. There's no disconnection. Everything is happening in God, per se, if we can use that word here, or let's say life itself. It's doing this, the speaking, the hearing, the seeing. Everything is universal. So I think that changed, my perspectives changed quite a lot when I understood that. Because before, I think I was, I've been always a spiritual seeker, interested in spirituality. But I remember having, being grounded in the body a bit too much because I had a lot of trauma. So I have a lot of these traumatic responses stored in the body. So I couldn't really trust my intuition. It was always very confusing. I didn't know what voice to listen to. So I had to find a way of, let's say, find that placeless place that would help me explore, investigate the limitations of body-mind. So I guess for me, it's almost like this beautiful dance of everything, of the body, mind, and consciousness, which that's how I refer to it. I'm a student of Vedanta, which is a Hindu philosophy, spiritual philosophy. So we call it a pure consciousness, which is not separate from anything. But I guess, Diane, there's something about being, let's say, focused too much in the body that made me too materialistic, in a sense of even my spirituality became, oh, let me ask the body, you know, to ask God what I can get, the things that I could get for the body to benefit the body or the mind somehow. So that didn't resonate, you know, with that, in that period. So talk to me for a moment about that again. How can we be connected to the body mind? Yes, of course, but without that, I would say that obsessed attachment, you know, to things, to the physical reality as being just that. How do we learn to embody what do you call magic in a way that is beneficial for us as a body, mind, and others, and the earth itself?
Yeah, I love that. You know, when you were speaking, what was coming to me was how, you know, we're spirits here in a human body. And so, and we can be so, we can forget that we're easily, like, sure. It's so easy to go like down into the rabbit hole of the, of the human ego. Oh, yeah. And so I think, like anything, it's this beautiful dance and balance and, you know, looking at different situations and sometimes even asking, well, what would, you know, if I was here at Spirit, which I am, what would I do in this situation? Or looking, you know, accessing it from a spiritual, your own spiritual perspective. Because, you know, I like what you said too. A lot of times we ask outside, like the divine outside of us, like, oh, please deliver this to me, right? But in some ways, it's just asking another authority figure to tell us what to do versus accessing, saying, you know, it's a partnership, right? Like, yes, source, all of, you know, I'm a spark of source and source is in me. So how do I, you know, connect in and, you know, lots of ways. I mean, different ways for different people. And I think this, you know, again, comes back to the intuition and, you know, one of the things I keep coming back to is really identifying what you love, like really what you love and doing that. Because when you do what you love, when we do what we love, we're filled with love. You know, and then we're in that space of acting from love versus versus fear, which is a sense of contraction or I don't know, or, you know, all of those pieces. And the more we can identify what is it that we love, and also you know, getting into service. And I look at what you're doing, right? Like you're of service, and you're not just keeping your spirituality for your own self, but really sharing it with the world. And, you know, I don't know if you experience this, but when I'm in service to other people, like all of that, all of the noise, service in a way that I love,
right.
And that is aligned with like who I am, right. Then all of that noise just kind of falls away. And even if I'm maybe out of my comfort zone, or if I'm challenged in a way, it still brings me back to who I really am. Like, right? Like we all have these amazing lights, and I see it as us seeing each other in the light. And so, and even having community around us that's able to say, hey, wait, that's not who your light is. Or wow, like that is like so you, like reflecting that back to us too, as a support, right. Can be super helpful too.
Right. Yeah. That's beautiful though. That's one of the messages that in your book that really caught my attention. So because I just mentioned the book. So the title is Be the Magic, Bite-Sized Nuggets of Wisdom to Feed Your Joy, Nourish Your Soul, and Open Your Heart. I mean, even the words that you choose to use, they're so inviting. They're very tasty in a way. Isn't it interesting? And like I mentioned off record, your book too, you know, I have here, I'm holding it. So it has this weight too, that the touch, it's the body feels very comfortable with, the eyes. So it's a sensory experience too. So you are really living the message, because it's everything, right? It's the body, it's the mind, and it's the soul, right? Observing all this, having this experience. So it's really beautiful what you're doing, Diane. It's soulful. And I do find that with spiritual, I do find with most people that I talk here and I work with, that they are in a way hungry for that, for deeper investigation into the realm of spirit, of what we are, not just who we are, but what we are. And I noticed that even with scientists, every time I mention anything and what I think I know about spirituality, they tend to open up and agree with some of it, not all of it, but some. So there's this almost instant connection, deeper connection that we make when we start talking about spirituality. So when you talk about your message, your beautiful message about doing what you love, I think very much has to do with that. I know that a lot of people do things that seem to be very physical oriented. Let's say selling shoes or hairdresser, fixing hair and all that. But there is something, if we start a conversation with them, it's so easy to see that they would really gravitate towards spiritual things, spiritual concepts and ideas. So maybe that's, I don't know, but that's what I have seen here by being contacted with so many people, that that's really the case, which means to me, it's a confirmation that we are coming from the same place. Our essence is the same. It's spirit, is consciousness, is God. It's one, it's not two. So with that in mind, I have to ask you, I usually ask this question to everybody. Did you set an intention when you wrote your book? Did you have a specific purpose to reach?
Oh, I did. Yes, I did. And the intention was simply that I wanted a source to write through me and to take my ego out of it, so, and not be attached to any of the outcomes. And also, for, every time I sat down to write, I said, just, you know, write through me, write something that will touch somebody's heart, that will, might ease their heart, might open their heart, and have it be an access to peace. Because, you know, when our heart is, you know, and I like what you were saying too about, you know, more people are open to spirituality. And, you know, we've been so mind-centric for so long. And, like, here we are. Like, you know, there's so many issues in the world right now that just take a deeper, you know, are not going to be solved simply by logical mind thinking. We need the mind, absolutely, to process things. But just getting into our heart space more is really where I think a lot of people are starting to to gravitate to and be curious about and say, well, what else, what is there? But yes, I think intention is so much. And, you know, you mentioned, like, if you talk to a hairdresser or someone who's selling shoes, and, you know, what I experience is that no matter what we're doing, it can all be intentional. Mm. Like, you know, I mean, the person who cuts my hair, I'm so grateful to because they help my hair look great, right? So if you're doing it from a heart-based space, you know, it's kind of that idea of let your life be the prayer of no matter what you're doing, let that be the prayer. If you're selling shoes, let that be the prayer. That's a service, you know. That's we all need shoes, you know. I don't want to go barefoot. I like to go barefoot, but but to do it in a way that makes a connection. I mean, there's in all of those areas, you have an opportunity to make a connection and make a difference in somebody's life. So.
Wow, I love that. What's not to love about that message? That's a profound one. It's practical at the same time, right? It's just, that's it. Yeah, you're being the message, not just delivering a message, right? For some reason, I think, you know, I read in your book, it's kind of funny. I mean, it was funny and painful at the same time. I think you talked about don't be afraid of silence, right? That's one of the messages. I love to talk. And I talk too much, I guess, sometimes. My husband, he keeps telling me, like, you know, give me a break. Because I come from these interviews here or whatever I read on my spiritual practices, and then I go to him because he's the only one close to me, the closest. And he's just, sometimes he can't take it. It's just too much for him. And I'm like, how can you push away something like this? It's so beautiful. But he said, you know, we talk about this all the time. Mm. And sometimes he's not nice about it. He's not really kind about it. So I was reading what the message here. So you say, I mean, there's so many insightful messages there, but you say, you ask questions. So the questions are we energizing others, ourselves, and the world with our speech? Do we think about its impact in how others are affected by how and what we say? Do we care how people are left after being in our presence? So these are very, I mean, you just made me, you didn't make me, but I stopped you. I just paused for a while. And I was reflecting on my own. I guess, Diana, that has to do also with one's expression, my unique expression in this reality. Because for me, it has been communication, clarity. I think there's nothing more powerful, empowering, and divine than being able to reflect something that's so abstract, that can feel abstract as God, spirituality, and all that, into words, you know, and you give life to it in a way that there's something about words, and when they are spoken in a way that there's truth is present. There's so much power in that. I don't know, I'm not, let's say, attracted to that idea, this concept, but has been, that's why I do what I do. So there has been, it chose me in a way. So that's been my way of expressing. And so I just have to be wiser about it, I guess, not talk to my husband about it so much. So, but that's a very powerful message. Talk to me about how, actually before that, I know that I want to go back to it. Before that, I do have another question for you. How did, I know you went through some challenges with your health, but was it then where you found this embodiment, you know, this very practical way of relating to the idea of magic and miracles, or before that?
Oh, well, I think, you know, even as a young child, I was always interested in, you know, ancient customs and traditions and older ways of being and spirituality. I didn't have a word for it then, but you know, I was always in awe in nature. I mean, just felt presence. But I think it was when I had a cancer diagnosis in my early 30s that, you know, it was an awakening. It was a shakeup and a wake-up call of, like, who am I really? What am I doing on this earth? You know, if this, we're here for such a blink of an eye, like such a short period of time. Mm. What do I want to do? And it just opened me up to that. And, you know, I have this sense that it was, while I don't wish, you know, to experience that again. But it, in a lot of ways, it was a gift because it set me on a spiritual path. And I think for a lot of people, having crisis, you know, we don't like the darkness. Like, right, we say, oh, we want it to be all love and light. I love all love and light. But the darkness is where, you know, growth and transformation and creativity lives, and where, you know, it's like the wound is where the light gets in. And so it was a very powerful time. And, you know, from there, it kind of went on from there. But yeah.
That's another question that I often ask. If it's suffering, it's always necessary in order to grow, to go deeper into, you know, the nature of our own being. I don't know. You know what I feel a lot of times? Because ultimately, we're not the body. Because the body will, let's say, it will dissolve. So in the mind, it feels to me too, it's not a stable place to live from. Mm-hmm. It's not a reliable one. So both of them. So I really think that in a way, suffering, it's a way of life's... it's a way that life shows compassion for us, mm-hmm. because we're so identified, right? Attached, obsessed mm-hmm. with the idea that we're the body, mind only, that something must happen. And it's not that it's on purpose, obviously not. We see that in nature, as you mentioned beautifully, that we are nature. We see that in nature too. It's always, something's always happening. It's coming. You see the autumn, you know, the leaves, they become all brown and orange and red. They're dying. It looks beautiful. It's death. Mm-hmm. And then everything renews itself again. So I think that suffering, it really is. The more I reflect upon that topic as an experience that has been my case too, going into deep suffering, unnecessary suffering, to really realize certain things. Because we are not the body mind, essentially we are expressing life itself through the body mind in a very unique way, which is beautiful, but it's limited, it's temporary, it's finite. So I think the infinite is always kind of knocking on that door and then make some cracks. Yeah. Like you said, you know, open, making some, yeah, something I mean, who wouldn't want to be, you know, who wouldn't want to have a guest called infinite? So, but it's not, it's painful, isn't it? If we are identified with the limited, with the finite. So yeah. I don't think we would recognize the infinite that easily. Mm. So it has to be, I don't know. That's what, it comes to me that way. That's, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but.
Yeah, you know, I think back to times that were really painful. I mean, just, you know, a lot of heartbreak, a lot of grief, a lot of loss, a lot of just kind of, you know, throwing my hands up to the universe and being like, what is this?
Right.
And, like, I don't think I signed on for this. Mm. And yet coming through it, I think a couple of things. One is, I know during those times, I was reaching for the light in such a deep way. Deeper ways than I had ever reached before. So I think that it opens us up to a more spiritual connection. But it's deeper than that. It's really like, I would call it reaching for the light. And it also gave me tremendous empathy for people who are suffering in a way that it's just much deeper than it was before. You know, I think before I had those experiences, it was more, I don't want to say cerebral, because, you know, I would feel for people, but it was like to experience that is to have empathy and compassion that we can have, you know, and and also can help others through in a way that I don't know that we can without the experience. I don't know. That was just something that came to me on that. While at the time, I remember thinking, oh, this is like, am I ever going to be my light-filled self again? I would not trade it, actually. It was, a very opening experience.
Yes. Yes. I think experience is what we really need in order to really learn. I remember asking a question. There's this ending question that I used to ask everybody. Now I'm not anymore for some reason. But I used to ask, what three experiences you wish everyone to have before they die? And I remember somebody saying something that nobody did. She said, I wish them to lose somebody, to go through something deep suffering in order to learn profound lessons. She's somebody that's very aligned with spiritual laws and spiritual knowledge. And she's a therapist too. Mm-hmm. So that surprised me that she said that, but at the same time didn't. It feels like we do need the experience of awakening, that's the term that a lot of people use. It's really waking up for what is true. When you said before, we were talking about asking, going through challenging situations, and then you often ask, what to do. I usually ask, show me the truth. I'm always asking for truth, because I think that's what we are really looking for, all of us. We want to know what we are and what is not even the purpose of this, of the experience, but essentially what are we? And then once we get to that, to understand, really realize the truth of our nature, everything changes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't at the same time. Isn't that interesting, Diane? It does, but it doesn't, because we don't change the world.
Right.
We don't change other people's lives. But something changes, and has to do with perception. We don't see ourselves in the world the same way.
There's a peace to that in what you're saying. I think that's, I had a spiritual teacher, Ellen Tad, who's wonderful, and she would, teach, in a situation to ask, given what is, what's mine to do? So, doing what's ours individually, which is not what anybody else is there to do. It's what's ours, and, to not do what's not ours to do. And to develop that gift of discernment so that we are. And I guess we're circling back again to the idea of intuition and inner knowing of really tapping into that. And the word that's coming to me is silence, which again is also circling back.
That's what I need.
And I love what you said, because life happens in conversation. Like, for me, there's nothing better than a juicy conversation that, that's full of life. Like, that's how life happens. And so it's not to not have those conversations, but it's also the balance of making sure that we're taking the time to really tune in to our silence, so that we can hear ourselves as well. I think that's the ultimate. For me, it's one of the things has been on my path of really like following what is true for me, not getting swayed, not getting out of my own lane, but just really staying there. Mm-hmm. And it could be difficult. It could be challenging, especially in this culture of constantly being told what to do and what's the best and what's the right direction. And, to hold it steady, regardless of the winds that are just rushing around us. It's an art, and it's a practice. It doesn't happen overnight. And so, cultivating those practices in good times before before you're in a challenging situation, I think is really key.
Yes, yes, yes. I absolutely agree with this idea of balance in a way, right? Creating, being able to know. I think you're speaking of wisdom. That's what it is, isn't it? There's a big difference between wisdom and beliefs, something in belief systems. That's something that I try not to, I try to be aware of that I'm not coming from belief systems. But there's something about, that quote in your book, that message was definitely for me, just being more silent, especially around certain people. because it's certain people, it's not really everyone, but you see, I wish that, because I'm coming from a place of freedom too, spiritual freedom, where you can just, I know I there's a lot of self-trust here, so I can just say things, truthful things in a kind way. I know I can do that. Yeah. I can communicate, I can have a conversation with anyone without getting into conflicts, you know. Mm. So I know I can do that. But not everyone can do that. And that's the interesting thing that I just found out in a very innocent way, because isn't it like obvious that not everyone is the same? But I guess I did, you know, because I come from that place like freedom, you know, we are here to enjoy this. We are infinite. Yeah. We are just going through this, let's say, perceived limited experiences, but it's just that. So why can't we have more fun in a way, meaningful fun?
Right.
So that's one thing that I don't know if, I do. I still have to go back to my own silence, right? Practicing around those people, but it would be wonderful to live in a world that we can just talk about anything and be open, right? Without fear. I think that's what it is. You mentioned love, fear. That's something that, always coming from love and without the hesitation, without hitting the brakes, per se. Right. But not everyone is there yet. So I guess we have to go back to wisdom then. Your wisdom.
So I think so too.
Magical wisdom.
I think it's a lot of, what I sense is that there's a lot of what I would say uprootedness. And so, I mean, literally, like not physically, although there's that too, but we're not grounded to ourselves. I know myself, if I'm not grounded, I could easily go into fear and then speak and communicate from that space. Even being conscious, sometimes that will creep in and then I'll say, oh, wait, that's not who I am. Mm. But I think that's part of it.
It's part of this experience, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if that could happen, Diane, if this is a realistic goal, per se, to have, to be so grounded that we never really come from fear. We're never in doubt. We're never... I'm wondering if there's such a thing.
Well, that's an interesting question. My sense is that, and I don't know, I think there are some people who have reached a high level of practice and call it enlightenment that they're able to do that. I think it's part of the practice, right? Of just being alive here and experiencing all of this and saying, and being able to be gentle with ourselves and not necessarily trying to get to a particular spot, but like, I would do that differently, or I learned from that. And so, but I think the more we can, look at nature and look at how, when nature is naturally grounded, we're in natural places, there's a rootedness. And there's lots of different practices too. So the more that we can, like we're talking about, we can do what we love. We could have conversations with people that feed us and that are soulful. Yeah. The more we can be in this flow where we're guided to the actions that bring us more joy, that are aligned, that are brings us people who we're aligned with, who conversations that that are aligned for both people. So when we're in that, it's life just becomes like just great. And sometimes it's kind of like we were talking about the darkness and the suffering. Sometimes I think we need that, just the opposite, just to say, oh yeah, like I remember how great it feels to be grounded and in flow. Let me get mm-hmm. back there.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know, and to have empathy for those yeah. who are not at the moment, you know, so when you're in connection with somebody who's clearly not grounded and is not speaking from love, you can be like, oh yeah, I know what that's like. Yeah. Yeah. How can I be kind? How can I help you get back into a grounded space instead of like, oh, what a jerk, right? Like,
well, sometimes that happens too. Like, okay, I can be kind. And then at the same time, there's this pushing away of what's unkind. And I think that's something that I'm learning. Wow, what an amazing practice, right, Diana? Not to push away anything. Just to be present to them. Just always being, in a sense, not about perfection, being perfectly still or perfectly unemotional. But there's something about that question again that I often ask, what is the truth? You know, what am I to see here? So I'm always, and sometimes that arises, yeah, when my husband, when he's really acting up, then that's what comes up. Like, okay, what's the truth here? And then compassion comes in.
Yeah. Right, oh, right. Yeah. Or even sometimes asking the question, what's the gift in this? What's the teaching in this?
Yes.
What do I need to learn about this?
Yes. Gosh, yeah, that's a big one. You know, I talk to a lot of therapists, so I know you're a therapist too. A forest therapist guide. Oh, I want to go back to this. I actually have in front of me here. But yes, so I was wondering if that has to do with in emotions, trapped emotions again. So I have been in married 3 times now. So I've been, maybe my choices came from that place where, you know, from trauma kind of based choices. And then the more work, the more healing work I do, and the more, let's say, spiritually grounded I become, then I find myself in situations that, how did I get myself in this situation? It feels like it's not in alignment. This is not aligned with what I know to be true. But then it's almost like creating the, you know, instructors that we can't really take them down. Perhaps not that it will be painful, not just for me, but for others. So I try, it is the case very much with families, as you might know. It's not easy even to let go of the body at the end when we're about to leave the body to die. So I think this is an interesting, it's fascinating to me, especially the letting it go, just gracefully, of things that are not meant for us, but in a way that doesn't cause unnecessary suffering. So that's always my reference, my guiding principle. So I want to make sure that I don't get hurt, the body, mind, and others too around me. But that's also, there's a different kind of dance again, because we can do that for too long as well, and then end up causing more unnecessary suffering. Okay, I don't know why I mentioned that. Gosh, maybe. I love being open, though. I can't help it. So going back to what you do, Diane, talk to me about the being a forest therapy guide and a creativity mentor and a healer. Are they all different aspects of what you do, or they are somehow integrated?
You know, I do a lot of different things, and they're all different ways to access, really, to really access ourselves again. And I should just clarify that forest therapy is not a therapy in the traditional sense of the word. So I'm not a traditional therapist, and that the training is much different from that. We actually say that the forest or nature is the therapist, and we're the guide who opens the door. And so, you know, for example, it's taking people into, you know, I say nature, but it could also be, I live in the city, I live in downtown Boston, and it could be, you know, a city park. And we go for enough time that we get we help people really get into their senses. So, you know, you could go for a walk in the woods and be completely in your head and not even remember one tree or stone or, you know, you're just thinking of that conversation or what that person said. And you do get benefit from that. But when you could actually be in this reciprocal relationship with the trees, with the sky, they all are speaking in a way. And it's being able to, listening and opening our eyes, really seeing in a different way, seeing patterns, seeing, you know, again, we talked a little bit about there's such a deep sense of lack of belonging that happens. But when we're able to go in and actually be in relationship with nature and also be in community, the combination of that is really powerful. So we'll be on our own looking at different, you know, really experiencing different aspects of it, and then coming back together to share, to speak, as you talk about what are you noticing? Because it's in the speaking that, you know, we're able to process and integrate, and it's optional, but you're also in, get that you're held in this community. And, you know, sometimes it's so simple. I wonder, I think, wow, is this doing it? Like, I know I love it and I feel differently, but every time I lead a group, few people will say to me afterwards, you know, that I get that this is actually a life-changing experience. Or I'll see somebody who seems maybe even kind of aloof and disengaged during the process, all of a sudden like tears streaming down their face and saying, like, I didn't realize how much I missed being in nature like this. Like, I didn't realize how disconnected I was. So it can be a really profound way of connecting again. And, you know, one of our, in our trainings, it talks about how we only protect what we love. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, you know, to be in love with something takes some tending and takes some time and takes some nurturing. And so when we could really get to know, and it could be, again, it could be the tree outside your window. And there's so much beauty outside. So, and it could be just looking up and looking at the sky. I mean, I'm looking out my window now at these amazing clouds that are going by. It's so when we can be in touch with that, it helps us to get in touch with our own magic. That's when we actually can help, you know, help us get what I would call, like, you know, messages or just really connect into a deeper part of ourselves. And again, creativity, I really see as creativity as an end to suffering. And there's some wisdom that, you know, when one is in grief, that's like making beauty out of that too, as the antidote. And, you know, the act of creating, we're here to create. I know myself, I think you have a wonderful quote on your website. I don't see it in front of me, so I might not get it right. But happiness is when, you know, what is in the love inside of you wants to be externally expressed. And that's the ultimate creation. So when we're not creating, and we're not creating in a way that, like, really feeds our soul, I think that's part of what leads to depression, to sleeplessness. I know before I was writing my book, I was really avoiding writing my book. I was a little afraid, honestly. I was kind of scared. And I actually stopped sleeping. And it was like my soul was like, you are not going to sleep until you write this book. Yes. Yeah, and it was the only thing that actually... it was the only thing that actually kind of let me sleep again. And, you know, I think maybe people can relate to this. When you've done something in the day that has been a real expression of your own creativity and creation, you just sleep better at night. You go to bed feeling like that was a good day.
Right.
You know? And, or if you've got something that you're interested to start the next day, you get up and like, I'm excited to start that. And that's an access to peace. You know, the more of us that do that more often, I sense it's rippling out in the world.
Yes. Wow. Beautifully said. Yes. Beautifully expressed that truth. Yes. I love the way you talk about magic. I don't use the word magic, but I can, what I how I relate to the idea is freshness. There's something that is, I think I mentioned off record too with you today. Mm-hmm. It's very fresh. I think you mentioned in the book, you used the word unconditioned. So there's no, it's not programmed, conditioned. We're coming from a place that's free. So there's something about in me that's always kind of looking for the big picture of life, and freedom always comes, you know, as the message, as something to be interested in. So the idea of freedom, I really relate that magic to that freedom, love.
I agree. And, you know, when you think about it, it's freedom. I think of, you know, most kids are very free. They're just there. There's a freedom. There's an awe. There's a wonder. They do what they love until they don't want to do it anymore. Then they just stop and they do something else. Yeah. And so there's this, they've got it going on. And so, and as kids, you know, it's like, oh, what's magical, right? But as adults, a lot of times we think, oh, that's silly. And so maybe what my version of magic is the awe and the wonder of the simple everyday. Like there's like the sacred of the everyday, what's so that we just take for granted, you know, that we walk by every day, or this, oh yeah, that's, used to seeing that, or, so the fresh, and I love what you say about freshness, because it is, it's seeing something with new eyes. And, you know, I know when I moved to this part of Boston, I thought I was moving more into the country, more with nature. But anyway, circumstances had me come back into the middle of Boston. And at first I was like, what am I doing here?
Yes.
And so I walked out the door and I said, okay, lead me to magic. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea where I was even going, but I just followed where my feet were taking me. And I arrived at this ancient beech grove. It's said to be the largest and oldest beech grove planted in the country. And it's a park, and it was these beautiful old European beeches. And I thought, how could I have lived in Boston for 30 years before this and never have seen this? And then it took me to the community gardens, which were unbelievable, and a man having tea there and having this great conversation. So, you know, I think staying in the space of, I can't believe I'm here, I don't want to be in the city, you know, just blocks all of that. That's not even, it's not even visible. It's not even possible to see it. But looking up with that freshness, as you say, all of a sudden it just feels like, wow, where am I? What else am I going to find?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It becomes playful, right?
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
It's a lot of playfulness. And the funny thing is the word light that you've been also mentioning here, it relates to that, being light, playful. So that kind of goes hand in hand with magic, doesn't it?
Right, like having a light heart. Having lightheartedness.
Yes, that's it. Oh my God, that sounds so wonderful. If we all could access that, right, in this lifetime. And, you know, I love your work, though, because that's you guiding us to reach this state of being. That's really the point, and that's what you are. With your book, with your work, and with your words and your presence, that's what you're doing. You have a beautiful presence too. Mm. So all that coming together to guide others, that's just, I can see clearly life doing this. This is not personal. It is universal, because that's life supporting itself in every way through these unique expressions that we are. Thank you so much for your presence again, Diane. Oh. Gosh, I could talk to you forever, and I have so many notes here. I'm like, gosh, I'm late already. But I want to mention, before we say goodbye for today, I want to mention the what else caught my attention in your book, the section about saying your words. That really stopped me too and made me reflect on singing, dancing. There's a quote, you say, a wise woman once offered me this advice: the quickest way we lose our power is when we stop singing and dancing. The quickest way to get to our to get our power back is to start singing and dancing. So and that kind of reminded me how, that I used to sing and dance before many years ago, and then I stopped. That ended. My husband, too, actually. He was dance, not sing. He's a horrible singer. I was not that bad, but I was not that great either, but I loved singing. So now I stopped everything. So that was just a fresh, beautiful reminder.
Oh, it really was, though. I hope you start singing and dancing again. It's in our biology, you know? Our ancestors did it. We did it. It's so natural. I hope you do.
Yes. Okay. So, you definitely planted that seed as a reminder. So I'll go back. Your book is here as a reminder next to me, so I can't forget. So another message was your comfort zone will kill you. So that it seemed very harsh in the beginning when I read it. Kill you? Gosh, the comfort zone, it feels really, when anything that feels comfortable, too comfortable. But of course, you, in a very, let's say, kind, gentle way, logical and practical, you explain that in that section. And that's so true. And there's, I think there's, you quoted somebody there. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Martin Prechtel.
Yeah.
The modern world has so much comfort. This is depression's litter nest. So you connected there the messages that depression is connected, or mental illnesses, right? And mental conditions are connected to being comfortable, which has to do with belief systems. So powerful message there. And then I love that too. Don't wait for perfection. Just get in the game. Just do something before you're ready. I love that. the beautiful messages, so many of them. And then I had here the smallest actions that have the power to transcend the biggest wrinkles. And then you give some of the ideas, meditate for a moment. I mean, everything that you've been talking about here in a way, watch a fun video. And then you have the perspective section that caught my attention too, that stopped me. And then, of course, wonder, and so many others. I can go on and on and on. I made a lot of notes here. So would you like to add anything that you left unsaid, any questions that I didn't ask, or read a passage in your book?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure what we have left for time, but I think you've done such a great job just, you know, facilitating this conversation, and it's so great. You know, I'll mention two of my favorite vignettes in the book.
Yeah.
One is called Transition Time, and that's about taking the pause in between what we do each, like, you know, we generally feel from the time we get up in the morning until we go to bed, we're generally going pretty nonstop.
Yeah.
But it's inviting people to just take 2 or 3 minutes in between your activities, you know, from going to work to, you know, picking up kids at school or going to an appointment, just stopping for a couple of minutes and letting the pause, see what actually comes out of the pause. So there's that. And another one, if we have time, I could just randomly, I could randomly read this little short vignette.
Yes,
and this one is, getting started is the hardest part. A few years ago, I was lucky enough to be included with a group of people re-mudding a beloved and sacred Southwestern adobe building, built in the original straw, mud, water method. We were there to give this hall a fresh coat of mud, just the right kind of dirt mixed with just the right amount of finely ground straw and water. Like many of the others, I'd never done this and was learning from a beautiful man considered the best and foremost expert on repairing and restoring the old historic adobe churches in the Southwest. I was excited and a little nervous. He started our instructions. Get yourself a bucket of mud and maybe a trowel. I was ready for elaborate instruction on how to trowel a smooth finish, nervously hoping my work would be good enough for this special building. I figured we'd have a few hours of instructions and then be allowed to practice somewhere. Our teacher walked over to the wall, plunged his forearm deep in the mud bucket, and slapped it on the wall, smoothing it around with the palm of his hand. He looked at the trowel and tossed it aside. He did this twice more and then said, "That's how you do it. Go ahead. You'll figure it out." The small group of us hesitated. Yeah. Responding to our questioning looks of surprise, he said, "It's like so many things in life. The hardest part is getting started. You just have to get in and do it." I thought of how many times I'd put off doing something I wasn't skilled in because of not getting it right or thinking I needed a lot more preparation and education. And here was a master craftsperson setting us loose on a sacred building whose instruction amounted to little more than just do it and figure it out. Friends, this is a joyful way to live. Is there something you're delaying that you can start right now? Just put your hand in and feel the mud. Yeah. You can do it. Your soul wants you to start.
See the message of simplicity, spontaneity, right? Creativity, freedom. Yeah.
Freedom.
Magic. Yeah,
it's
that's
freedom
it.
Again.
Yeah, that's yeah. it. How wonderful. Thank you so much again, Diane, for your beautiful presence in our reality.
Thank you so much.
About you is just so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for what you do in the world as well. It's been so wonderful to speak with you, and I'm appreciating you so much. Thank you.
So we're saying goodbye for today. I'll have your website link on the podcast notes. That's DianePienta.com. It will be there, clickable, easier that way. Take good care of your beautiful self, Diane, and we'll talk soon. We'll be in touch again. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Diane Pienta and her work, please visit DianePienta.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.